Blog Talk Radio.
Today on Backroom Politics, it's Super Southern Tuesday. As opposed to Super Tuesday last week, we're going to talk about the political races down in the South for the GOP nomination for 2012. Also, Afghanistan continues to be a ticking time bomb. Have we botched the end game in Afghanistan, and are we going to pull out immediately, or is it just a factor of our military troops are spread so thin? Could this be the end of the Newt Gingrich campaign? How well does he have to do in Dixie to keep it going? We can try and handicap it, but it probably won't be accurate. This and Tell Me a Story today on Backroom Politics. Good afternoon, folks. We are live, some of us in D.C., some of us in Maryland, some of us all spread over. I'm actually broadcasting live from Oklahoma, America's heartland. This is Backroom Politics Live on Blog Talk Radio for Tuesday. It is 4 o'clock on the East Coast, 3 o'clock here on the Central Coast. And joining me as always, first I want to introduce, coming back from his great tour of Mexico, Congressman Al Swift. How you doing, sir?
I had a fabulous time in Mexico, sitting on my ass by the pool.
Okay, first of all, Al, you're not even on the horn 2 seconds, and already you've blown through with a cuss word. You're very relaxed.
Oh, I apologize.
This is a family show, sir. As he does now, every Tuesday from now on, he is the former 8-term member of Congress from Washington's 2nd Congressional District, the former vice president of government affairs for Burlington Northern Railroad, Emmy Award-winning broadcaster, Congressman Al Swift. Al, welcome back.
I'm delighted to be back.
Joining us also, as he does every Tuesday, he is the former floor chief for Congressman Gerald Ford, longtime Washington insider, and former vice president of government affairs for the National Broadcasting Corporation. He is the Honorable Bob Hines. Bob, how you doing?
Oh, doing very well here at Shelley's, but Al and I feel a little bit lonely.
I bet you do. Also joining us from places unknown in the National Capital Region, he is longtime Washington insider, longtime former Senate staffer, former Undersecretary of Commerce, and current very distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center. He is the Honorable Alan Moore. Alan, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. I'm over in Virginia.
You're in Virginia. Excellent.
I am.
Joining us also is our resident non-Howley. He is the Vice President of China Affairs for the Eurasia Center. He is a bar-certified attorney in New York and the great state of New York and the District of Columbia. He is Dr. Ralph Winnie. Ralph, welcome back.
Thanks. And I'm here in the great state of Hawaii helping out with our caucuses today. And we'll have the chance to meet Matt Romney later on today.
Oh, wow. That'll be good. Well, we're going to talk about Hawaii and some of the other races that are going on for the GOP nomination. But finally joining us from, it looks like, from his station up in Maryland, he is the former chair of the Maryland Democratic Party, longtime Washington insider, Carl Turvin. Carl, how you doing, Bo?
I'm doing great.
Good,
weather's good. Beautiful here.
That's fantastic. Well, I got to tell you something. It's beautiful down here in Oklahoma, but the real storm is happening down south, where the, as they are calling it now, Super Southern Tuesday is going on. First, before we get into what's happening today, I want to talk about what happened in Super Tuesday last week. Very interesting results. Alan, I want to start with you. What surprised you about Super Tuesday last week?
What surprised me was that Romney had a really good day, and the press indicates, Well, he's not done yet. He's not done yet. He won where he had to win. He won 6 out of 10. He picked up more delegates than anybody else. And the poor guy, he's sort of Rodney Dangerfield. He can get no respect. He keeps going into these must-win situations. He wins, and he still gets no respect. That's what surprised me. I think I was also surprised a little bit that that Gingrich did as poorly as he did. He did very well in Georgia, but he was mostly third after that. And at one point, he had hopes of winning in Tennessee and Oklahoma, and those all went by the by. Santorum took those. So Santorum had a decent day. Gingrich had a bad day. Romney had a very good day that just didn't get a lot of respect.
I'm going to ask this question. I probably know the answer, but were you following Super Tuesday while you were down south?
You got to tell which Al you're talking to. You're talking to
Al,
this Al. We followed it. But very frankly, the truth is not much changes from week to week. You know, we focus on the immediate results of a primary. And because we're who we are, we can hash that over for hours and hours and then move on to the next thing. But frankly, not much is happening.
Bob, this brings up the question. I mean, Al makes the point of not much is happening is, you know, Super Tuesday is not necessarily as super as it used to be. We've kind of figured that out. But are we seeing the final straws of maybe refurbishing or revamping the campaigns as they are, maybe changing the caucus and the primary rules?
Well, I think that probably the Republican National Committee and the chairman of the National Committee and some of the high poobahs of the administrative end of the party have probably realized that the way they structured things this year was not the best way to highlight the candidates. And my guess is that they'll play with it again and then before the next election. I certainly would if I were they.
Well, Carl,
could I butt in on Bob?
Of course, go ahead, Congressman.
I was just going to say that the fact is that if you had both parties now have had, you know, kind of the graybeards kind of rewrite their party rules, and both have had disasters. I don't think they know how to rewrite the rules in any kind of a rational way, or if they do, there are forces within the party that won't let them. So I don't expect to see a lot of – I expect to see change. I don't expect it to do any good.
Well, Carl, let me ask you this. From, you know, you were a former state chairman of the Democratic Party up there in Maryland. From a state party chair aspect, is there something going on that maybe we should change in order to keep voter empathy down?
You know, if you go back to the 70s and the 80s, all the way back to 1968, the Democratic Party has changed its rules quite a few times. And I think at this point, people are fairly happy with the rules that we have. There was always talk back in the 80s of regional primaries, that we might be able to have 4 or 5 regional primaries, and everyone would have to adhere to that. That idea never went anywhere. So it's very hard. We always had trouble when Chuck Burnett, the late Chuck Burnett, a close friend of mine, when he and I were at the National Committee, we wanted to do something with New Hampshire and Iowa, and we always had a problem. I mean, they just stuck to their guns, and they were going to boycott, and they were going to do this, and they were going to do that, and we had to leave that alone. So it's very tough.
Al, would you agree with that? Is from a Democratic perspective, is that accurate?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you take a look at what McGovern did when he reformed the party, he damn near destroyed the whole thing. I can remember at the local level in my home county, the caucuses, which were supposed to be the people speaking, people showed up who you'd never seen at a party meeting, who you never saw again at a party meeting, who took over. The elected precinct committeeman wasn't even elected as a delegate to the county convention. And this was all done in the name of opening the process. Well, it sure as hell did, and look what happened.
So, Ralph, judging from what you're seeing, particularly out there in Hawaii, what's surprising you most about what's happening with the primaries, particularly in Super Tuesday, and what is the vibe you're hearing out there in Hawaii regarding the primary today?
Well, I think as far as the primary today, the Romney campaign is very well organized. They have poll watchers set up to go to every precinct to ensure that the voting is done fairly. A lot of robocalls, a lot of boots on the ground, and the other campaigns are not as well organized, with maybe the exception of the Ron Paul campaign. I think what surprised me about the Super Tuesday was how well Romney did, yet how unwilling the media was willing to give him credit for a lot of the votes that he received throughout many of the states. Romney is in a very good position to move forward, especially if he can win one of the southern states and also win Hawaii today.
So, Bob, all things considered, I mean, Super Tuesday last week, we also saw some surprises in some of the House primaries and some of the House races, particularly in Ohio. What was the takeaway from that? Are we going to see more and more of these, dare I say, bloody head-to-head combat between member versus member as they deal with redistricting?
The answer to that is we are in the same situation we're in every election for the House of Representatives that follows the census taking, because that means redistricting. It means that states' populations require either maybe losing a seat, in which case you always have problems, maybe gaining a seat, it gives them a chance to, you know, help the majority party pick up another congressional seat. But in California, in Ohio, I think in New Jersey, there's all over the country, there are probably maybe a dozen or 15 seats where you've got members running, you know, from one party running against each other. And that's going to, it always causes a great deal of consternation among the parties. And you've got another factor this year, too. And I'm not sure it has so much to do with the redistricting, as it has to do with the view that the Tea Party folks have, that some members of Congress aren't conservative enough, and so there we've got the best example I know of that is in Utah, where Senator Orrin Hatch, who no one would consider to be anything but a conservative, is running against a state senator who has had hundreds of thousands of dollars pumped into support his campaign by, I think, Freedom Works, you know, Dick Armey's Tea Party group. I mean, it's just now, I suspect that even if Senator Hatch is defeated, that whoever defeats him in the primary system in Utah will be a Republican. But it just strikes me as we're eating our own when we decide that Orrin Hatch isn't conservative enough, when he's, you know, if the Republicans would gain the Senate, he'd be the chairman of the Finance Committee. What a marvelous opportunity for the Republicans to put their mark on something. And we may end up, even if we get, even if we win, we hold the seat, we lose the chairman of the Finance Committee to someone besides the guy who's strong and able to handle the matter and been around for 20 years, but Orrin Hatch. It blows my mind.
Alan, when we look at, like, for example, the race involving Dennis Kucinich, Dennis Kucinich is going home. Is this a wake-up call from the other members of Congress that have got this type of battle, or are we going to see maybe some concede, maybe it's time to go spend time with the family?
Well, I think it's not as many as 15. There were a handful where it was where two sitting representatives had to face off. Somebody had to win this one. Marcy Kaptur, who's also been around, well respected, and paid a lot of attention to the home fires, whereas Dennis Kucinich tended to be something of a dilettante on big national and international issues, and that was one of the things that hurt him, that and the fact that he dabbled with the idea of going out to Washington State to our friend Al's neighborhood and maybe run there, and that raised an interesting question for the home folks. Gee, here's a guy who's thinking about jumping ship, leaving Congress, going out to Washington so he can stay in the Congress. Is that who you really want? So every one of these is unusual, and I think the people who've decided if they're in, they're in. But it's such an unusual circumstance, as Bob points out. It happens every time that we have a census and have to redistrict, and there's a handful that come up. The people who decided they didn't want to run, and there were some of those, decided I'm out. David Dreyer, a highly respected California rep, found himself, in effect, without a district, and he thought, I'm not going to go fight an uphill battle, bang my head against the wall, maybe lose. I think I'll go and find some other things to do. And so I wouldn't read a lot into the Kucinich captor seat, other than the fact that you better have credibility at home, and especially in a down economy, of being able to pay attention to the home fires, or you might be in trouble. And he was, and he's gone.
Justin, this is the other Al.
Yeah, go ahead, Congressman.
Yeah, one of the things I always love to beat up on the media, but one of the things that was not mentioned, repeatedly not mentioned, I might add, in the Kucinich race, was that Marcy Kaptur was one, a very, very good congresswoman, for all the reasons that Alan suggested and for others. And secondly, she's tough as nails. She is not somebody you want to easily go up against. So they all kind of laid it on Kucinich's flakiness. I think that it also had to do with the fact that Marcy Kaptur was somebody that was not going to be defeated easily. The other thing I wanted to mention, unless you're going to bring it up later, we've had some interesting resignations or people that say that they're not going to run again.
We're going to talk about that probably a little bit later. The entire list of people who have gone out. And I think that'll tie in to probably a segment later in the hour as far as now that people are going head-to-head, who exactly is going home and how much of an impact it's going to have on Congress. But, Congressman Al, I want to stay with you. When you look at these head-to-head matches, you didn't have to go through any of this back in 1990, did you?
No. In fact, I even ran one election in a legitimate two-party state unopposed, believe it or not. I don't recommend that, incidentally. It's harder and harder. It's hard as hell the following election to get people to remember who you are, because you weren't doing any big television ads and what have you. But we actually had that.
Bob, and we're coming up on the break here real quick, but Bob, I'm going to let you have the last word. We saw Santorum hit where we thought he would hit, the Bible Belt, winning Oklahoma, winning the other southern states during that day, with the exception of Georgia. Even Newt's win in Georgia, some thought would have been much more impressive than it actually is. The question is, how much momentum did Santorum actually get from this? And number two is, how much of a blow was this to the Gingrich campaign?
Well, you know, a win is a win. Mr. Romney won Ohio by 13,000 votes, but he won the state. I think when you're talking about primaries, these are mostly, we're getting into the area now of proportional representation a little bit. And some of these things, so if you get 35% of the vote and someone else gets 34% of the vote, you, quote, win, and you get that bit of PR, if you will. but the other guy's getting as many delegates as you are. And the biggest problem, and why I think we will restructure the system a little bit, is because this proportional stuff means it is almost impossible, unless you have a super popular individual, it's almost impossible to have a short nominating process. And we're going to be going probably into June maybe before we settle this. So, and that, I think a lot of the professionals think that the party is wary as welcome out a little bit with this this long process.
Well, we'll let that be the last word, but when we come back, we're going to talk a bit about the races today, namely Alabama, Mississippi, and Hawaii. This should be a breeding ground for Santorum to really, really pull ahead and get closer and closer to front-runner status. But we're seeing signs that Mitt Romney is not down and out in Dixie just yet. This is Backroom Politics live from, well, just about everywhere from Oklahoma through Virginia, D.C., and Maryland. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Stay with us. And we're back here in, well, I'm in Oklahoma. Bob and Al are up in Shelley's back room, 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Alan is from an undisclosed location somewhere in Virginia. Our resident, Howley in residence, out in Hawaii, Ralph and Carl out there in Maryland. This is Backroom Politics Live on Blog Talk Radio. Hey, we're talking right now about the Super Southern Tuesday races, basically Alabama and Mississippi, and we don't want to forget our friends out in Hawaii. But a lot of big news coming out of this, and there's a lot of all-in going on down in Dixie regarding the primaries. I'm going to start with you, Bob. Rick Santorum, you would think, particularly with the strong showing he had in Dixie and in the heartland of America with the religious right, this should be a win for him, shouldn't it?
Well, I'm not probably the most knowledgeable person about Southern politics, but I would agree with what you're saying that I would have expected in the polls, showing that he and Gingrich possibly were running fairly close, with Romney trailing somewhat behind. What I've been seeing the last several days is each one of them are either in the very low 30s or very high 20s. It's quite surprising to me that it looks to me like both the states could be almost maybe as close as Ohio was last week.
But Alan, when you look at the dynamic that Santorum has with the Southern evangelistic votes, and you look at what apparently seems to be a somewhat disconnected, he's not of our type of religion campaign but Romney seems to be working with, is it surprising to you that it's not a runaway total for Santorum versus Romney?
No, here is a case where Romney really is helped by the presence of both Gingrich and Santorum, because those two, in effect, divide the conservative vote. As Bob said, they're all at about 30%, and we'll see where it in the polls, which are never very good for primaries, but they're the best we've got. So we'll see who emerges. But what you'll hear from Santorum and Gingrich after this is, we divided the conservative vote, we divided the non-Romney vote. If the other guy would get out of this, then we would slaughter Romney, which is not necessarily obvious. There are a lot of thoughtful people who reflect on the issues, reflect on people's backgrounds and histories, and come to different conclusions. That's why we have elections. And Romney's got we know from other cases, the higher educated, the higher earning folks, and then some other interesting kind of divisions. Romney does better with women than those other two guys. So, he's got around 30%. I think the surprise is that he's as competitive as he is. But when you reflect on the fact that he might get 30% and eke out a victory over those other two guys, it's in part because they divided that conservative vote.
But Bob, you look at Pete Perry, who's the chairman of the Hinds County GOP, which basically encompasses Jackson, Mississippi. He said there hasn't been such a heated primary Republican primary in Mississippi since '76, and that's back when your old boss Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan went head to head. Is it shocking to you that now all of a sudden a somewhat smaller Southern Gulf state is just getting a lot of prominence in this time in the Republican primary?
Well, if the situation were that Romney was well ahead, it probably would not be a particularly significant day. But that's not the case. I mean, as far as everybody looks at it right now, it's hard to see how anybody but Romney can win, but he doesn't seem to be able to break away. And I think that as long as you have you have an interesting situation here because, you know, Gingrich is next door. He's a next door neighbor. And so he had some standing down there. Our friend Mr. Santorin is speaks to a lot of the social issues that the population down there thinks is important. So he's got a backing. And of course Romney is the presumptive leader, and a lot of significant members of the party have come out in favor of him. Some of them being Southerners. And I think that helps to give him some support. So you've got three very credible candidates right now in both those states. I don't think anybody's going to get as much as 35% if you look at the way the polls were just a day or so ago.
Hey, Justin, this is Alan.
Yeah, Alan.
Something else that was in the news today about Mississippi and Alabama that's fascinating, troubling. And I'll mention it, is that they did some polling of potential voters and said, is President Obama a Muslim or a Christian? And let me just tell you what the Washington Post reported. Mississippi said 52% of those expected to vote today believe that he's a Muslim. 36% don't know what he is, and 12% think he's a Christian. In Alabama, 45% believe he's a Muslim, 41% don't know, 14% think he's a Christian. This is fascinating to me after all this talk, and it's also a reminder of the sort of the regional divide, the political divide. I mean, most of us here in Washington totally accept the fact that the man is a Christian. He's a Christian. And yet the people who are voting down there today don't believe he's a Christian, or they don't know. And there was a second question that was I also found both troubling and in a way fascinating, and that is do they think that his parents back 50 years ago should have gotten married, that should marriage between two races be legal or illegal? And they 25%, an average of 25% of the voters in both states believe today that interracial marriage should be illegal. I just found those things, as I say, fascinating and troubling, and a useful reminder of how humble we all have to be when we're talking about what we think is going on in the country and what we think is going to happen on any given day in one of these elections, because there are a lot of people who think very differently than the way many of us do.
Well,
Alan, this is Bob.
Can I break in for a minute?
Hold on. Let's go to Bob first. Bob, go ahead.
Alan, on those numbers you were talking about, were any of those polls, did any of those polls ask with respect to Mr. Santorum whether people were concerned anymore about a Catholic? Because I would expect there might be some of that as well down there.
Well, two things. I don't think that was part of this poll, but I've seen some other polling data where when asked about Santorum's religion, more people think he's an evangelical Protestant than think he's a Catholic.
And
that's amazing.
Carl, you had a comment too. Go ahead, Carl.
Yeah, first of all, does it say what age group the polling was?
No, but it's certainly a relevant point on those who oppose interracial marriage, that it would be an older, you would think it would be an older cohort.
Right. What I'm thinking is that, first of all, you know, I'd love to see the breakdown of the poll and see what the younger people feel. You know, we all know, unfortunately, that sometimes old thoughts and old thinking takes a long time to change. And in some people, it will never change. So I think that you have to take that into consideration. And unfortunately, Mississippi, Alabama, were two very, very bad states in the 60s, as we all know.
Well, Al, let me go to you, Congressman Al, real quick, and I want to talk about, you know, the subject of the blue dog Democrats in these type of pollings. I mean, you're talking about McGovern-type Democrats. You're talking about the Byrd-type Southern Democrats. Those blue dog old-school Democrats still resonate very well when you talk of them down south. Is that legacy continuing on, or is this just a matter of we're dealing with something that we've talked about many, many times? Are we dealing with just a complacent and uninformed electorate?
Let me go back and make one comment before. Did that poll have anything to do with Mormons? It would seem to me that if you were going to go down the religions, the South would have something to say about Mormons too, which would
The only thing I saw, Alan, again here, the only thing I saw was they were asking specifically about the president's religious beliefs. Was he a Muslim?
I see.
Was he a Christian? Or did they not know? That was all that I saw.
I got you. So it's a limited amount of information we're working with. Going to what Justin asked, would you repeat the question?
I mean, the bottom line here is, Alan, you know, we look back and we see the blue dog Democrats. These are views that are normally associated with, you know, the hardcore right-wing nut Republicans that everybody, you know, typically or correctly or wrongly identify as Southern hard right conservative Republicans.
Yeah, but blue dogs are Democrats. There aren't a lot of them left down there in the South, and those that are surviving are probably pretty well dug in to have lasted this long.
But are we seeing that legacy continue, or are we in fact dealing with, based on the results of like this Washington Post poll, are we seeing the results of a complacent, uninformed electorate?
Well, Bob is over here snickering and laughing, and so am I. When was the last election in which we weren't dealing with a complacent, uninformed electorate?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, Bob, you seem to be giggling at this. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think this campaign has degenerated from talking to major issues to talking about some, I think, in the last month or so, attacks on each other on sidebar issues. I think we've gone a long way toward talking about things that aren't nearly as important to the electorate once someone is elected. And I don't know why we're talking to these social issues. I've always felt that they were the bane of the party to some degree, because they get us off the issues that are significant and important. And most of these social issues are things that are very hard to be legislated on. They don't, they're questions of religious or philosophic belief, and they're the kinds of things that we best left to people to handle on their own rather than getting involved in the political structure.
Alan, what do you think on that?
Yeah, let me just say, though, that I think if we could get a comprehensive analysis of comments on the stump and comments even in debates, that the amount of time spent on the social issues is considerably less in the conversation and debate and on the stump than is the attention that it gets in the media. And I'm not bashing the media over that. They're looking for something new. How many times do they want to go into Romney's views on the economy or a critique of the president's either economic or health or energy views? We kind of move to what stands out as different. You know, where is the man bites dog story? Everybody knows kind of the economic stuff, and then when somebody goes off the reservation and talks, and Santorum has shown that he can rival Newt Gingrich in that particular skill of going off message and getting into other areas, then the press jumps on it because it's new and fresh and different, and then it gets blown up. the public responds and polls reflect, and then over time it kind of diminishes a bit, and the issues relating to the economy that most people care the most about comes back to the fore.
This is Al. I completely agree with what Alan has just said, that that's the way the press behaves. I disagree with his statement earlier that he wasn't bashing them. I think they need to be bashed. I think they need a 2x4 upside the head about hourly on the hour, because they are not covering the issues that are important in selecting a president. They're covering all this BS stuff.
But, Al, I mean, this is coming from an Emmy Award-winning broadcaster, Al, which is kind of surprising. But, you know, we also look at, you know, we can blame the media, but we also look at a quote that was in Politico today from Tom Jensen of the public policy polling firm, a Democratic polling firm, and his quote is, "The first lesson you learn as a pollster is that people are stupid," unquote. He continues by saying, quote, "I tell a client trying to make sense of numbers on a poll that are inherently contradictory that at least once a week." Is he necessarily wrong, Al?
No, he's right.
Bob, what do you think?
I think there's more truth to that than I like to believe is true. I think it is very true.
Alan?
Well, maybe that's why the framers created a constitution that didn't allow everyone to vote. They were much more restrictive. I'm not suggesting – if you're a strict constructionist, you might want to go. It's tempting to think about what the effect would be if we went back to rules relating to land ownership, poll taxes, and stuff like that. I am not embracing or endorsing or advocating. I'm merely reflecting on what the framers were doing. But you know something? Everybody gets to vote, and if they can be maneuvered and manipulated, and we know they can in a lot of different ways, and everybody in politics tries to maneuver and manipulate, that's our system. And you adapt to it, and we have, and it's an ugly mess oftentimes, but we seem to muddle through.
Yeah, but you know, Al,
this is Carl. Let's hope that everybody gets to vote.
I agree, but Congressman Al, you know, and I hate to pick on the Democrats, and Carl, I'm going to come to you on this and your thoughts, but when we look at Tom Jensen of public policy polling, and he says the first lesson you learn as a pollster is that people are stupid, he gives an example he was pointing out surveys that show that voters, particularly Democrats and Republicans, voters embrace individual elements of what many call Obamacare, but they reject the overall law. And that is, as he put it, an example of the political schizophrenia and the simple ignorance that politicians have to contend with. That's a Democratic pollster saying that, Al. And you know that there's some parts down south that's usually Republican. Is that across the board an issue? Is that something you had to deal with as a congressman?
Sure. I had a poll taken once in my district, said, do you want to have Amtrak restored running through your district from Seattle to Vancouver, British Columbia? And it was something like 85% said yes. Then the second question was, if you knew that Al Swift was chairman of the railroad subcommittee and could make it happen, would you be more or less likely to vote for him? And they said, no.
Are you sure they didn't know you, Al?
The way the question was asked, we told them everything they needed to know to make a rational and consistent decision, and they opted out.
This is Bob. You know, one of the things, too, that I think it is fair to say, and I might say that I don't know that people are so much stupid as they are ill-informed, because all you have to do is take a look at some major issue like Social Security or health care or something, where we're talking, you know, big issues about how to pay for it and how important it is to the public. Well, each party has a position on that, and you know, and it's very difficult to argue when you say as a Democrat, I'm going to save Social Security as it is. Well, in fact, you know, that if that's your view and you say that enough, there's a whole lot of folks who are going to like that view, and that's a totally I wouldn't say irresponsible, but it's an impossible situation because Social Security has to change if it's going to continue unless we raise the taxes, you know, that people pay for Social Security by about 30%, which nobody wants to do. I mean, we have to change it. And Republicans on their side have just as many foolish statements or self-serving statements on their position, which they know is not the solution that's going to work. And I think a lot of the ignorance of the public is that they are listening to their representatives who have a political interest in a particular position, whether it be Republican or Democrat, and they espouse that position, and it makes it hard for anybody. And then when the public has a view that X is a good idea, it's hard to help people then understand that X won't work. We've got to find a different answer because if we try to do X, it's not going to work. And those kind of problems, I think, are endemic to the system.
Alan, go ahead.
This is Alan. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think there's a couple of things here. Using the word stupid, I think, is not the word that most of us would pick. We would probably say, one, there's a lot of ignorance. And ignorance means you simply don't have the facts at hand. Now, that's not because they're not available to you, but you don't have the facts at hand. And so you're not well informed about some things. And we've mentioned a couple of them here. My favorite always used to be polls that showed that a majority of Americans thought America spends more on foreign aid than it does on Medicare, and it spends less than 1% on foreign aid and close to 20% on Medicare. It's just that kind of which is ignorance of the facts. Now, there's another thing though, which is denial. Denial of information that is pretty much irrefutable, but people don't trust it. And this is, I think, where the president's religion comes into it, because that information is out there. There's been a lot written about it. I think that most people in both parties have kind of run the course on this and acknowledge the president is a Christian. He doesn't go to church every Sunday. Most Christians don't. But to see polling data that says that a majority believe that more think he's a Muslim than far more think he's a Muslim than Christian, and more think he's a Muslim than those who are just not sure, that strikes me as something that's a little bit different. They've heard it. They've heard he's a Christian, but they don't accept it. There's sort of this denial that goes on there. That I'm not saying that's a reflection of stupidity. It's kind of a lack of trust, and people can be encouraged to draw these contrary views by politicians, by media, by nowadays websites and loud voices. It's something you have to deal with. It's not like you're going to be able to.
And Alan, I would agree with that. Look at the birth certificate issue. That seems to be something that overwhelmingly has been settled, yet there's still a core group of people in many parts of the South and other parts of the country that refuse to believe that he's an American citizen. And how
it's an excellent example. Excellent example.
Well, let me go back and address something real quick. You know, Alan, you were talking about, you know, majority of the Christians don't go to church on Sunday and that I think needs to be a northern take. I can tell you, being here in the heart of the Bible Belt down here in Oklahoma, Oklahoma shuts down on Sunday from about 8 a.m. till about noontime. And that's predominantly through the South. It seems that seems to be a Southern take versus a Rust Belt or a Pacific Northwest or a New England take. Would you see that as accurate?
Well, let me just say, and if I said a majority, I didn't intend that because I don't know how many. I just know that there are a huge number of Christians. More in some parts of the people who call themselves Christians and consider themselves Christians who are not regular churchgoers. We've had a number of U.S. presidents who fit neatly into that category. And that was my only point, that it's a very common phenomenon. It's probably a majority in some places, certainly not in others, and I wouldn't begin to speak for the South, where we know that there's a lot of loyalty to church that you don't find everywhere.
And Justin,
Justin.
This is Alan. Carl is trying to get a word in edgewise, and I'll make this one short. I think that if, in fact, we think that the public is ignorant, it brings us back to the fact that the media is not doing its job. And the media is concentrating on all the minutiae. It is not doing the harder thing to do, which is to make the issues understandable to the average American. And I would like very much to do a program just on that someday. I'd like to just lay the media out on the table and open it up and see what's going on inside there.
Yeah, and that's something we can do down the road, Al. I think that would be a great best of. But let me go to Carl. Carl, you've been patient. What are your thoughts?
I've got 2 points. Number one, President Obama has often said that if my parents knew that I wanted to run for president of the United States or I was going to run for president of the United States one day, they probably wouldn't have given me the middle name Hussein. That's number one. Number two, your original question 5-7 minutes ago or more was asked about health care, why some people like health care and some other, and then, you know, they like health care in certain ways, and then they reject it totally. Well, you know, if you have a daughter that's just graduated college and can't get a job and, you know, under the Obama health care, and maybe even today, they can get insurance until they're 26 years old. Now, the other side of the coin is, and there are other examples, but the other side of the coin is there's been so much negativity out there. You know, once every 2 weeks I get a message on the Internet from a friend of mine who shows me why Obamacare doesn't work, how it taxes everything, how it misses people, how it's bad for seniors, all this other stuff out there. So even those the people look at the program and they say, what's good for me? Wow, I like that. But then they reject the other totally because there's a lot of negativity toward the whole act.
Right. Well, what I'm going to do is we're coming up on the break. We've kind of gotten a little bit off the reservation by going into deeper analyticals of what's happening here in the South this week. But I do want to talk about the impact of the votes itself. When we come back in 3 minutes, we're going to talk about who's on life support, who's going to move forward, and basically who's going to win in Tampa. This is Backroom Politics live, kind of, from Shelley's Backroom, 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., by way of Virginia, Maryland, and Oklahoma. Stay tuned. We'll be back in...
And Hawaii.
Stay tuned.
Of the sun and west of the moon, we'll build a dream house of love. Moon at night. not die. We'll keep it that way. Up among the stars we'll find a harmony of love to a lovely tune.
And, oh, by the way, in case we didn't notice, it's coming up on Happy Hour. This is Backroom Politics Live on Blog Talk Radio from Oklahoma, Washington, D.C., the Commonwealth of Virginia, and the great state of Maryland. Joining us as they do every week, Congressman Al's back from the Mexican trip, Bob Hines, Alan Moore, Carl Tuven, and Dr. Ralph Winnie out there in Hawaii. How you doing, guys? Oh, wait a minute. I got to take you guys off of mute. It is time for happy hour, so I guess Bob and Congressman Al are going to order their martini / glass of Shiraz. Being that I don't have Jack Daniels access right now, I'm going to go with Coke Zero. I'll smoke my cigar later. And Carl and Dr. Ralph, well, Ralph, you can eat poi.
I'm drinking straight water.
There you go. Hey, we kind of went on down.
Carl, you've sobered up.
That's right.
You guys are vicious. Stability, Congressman.
I'll get you back for that one.
Okay.
Okay.
Let me get you in a headlock.
Because this is the second hour, this is about the time I usually lose control. So let me regain control for a second. We were talking earlier about the super southern primaries going on down south, Alabama, Mississippi, and Hawaii. We kind of got into a more intellectual discussion on what's actually happening with the electorate, particularly down in the south. But I want to talk about the race themselves because there's a lot of people with a lot of stake right now in the southern primaries today and Hawaii. Well, we're going to first talk about Hawaii because I think Hawaii is going to be a little bit more cut and paste on this one. And, Ralph, I'm going to go to you. It looks like
sure.
Romney's just going to walk away with Hawaii. Is there any indication that somebody like a Santorum or is Ron Paul a dark horse in this? Could he come out? I mean, you guys are pretty wacky out there sometimes.
Well, Romney has a very well-established organization out here. He has very strong support among the LDS community, among BYU, Hawaii. And his son Matt is out here to pound the pavement and get people out to the polls to vote for Romney. I think what's surprising is that Newt Gingrich has been out here previously on vacation. He's actually bought a home out here. He had strong ties with the local Republican Party, having been the Lincoln Day speaker for a couple of years in a row. And I was surprised that he did not get more traction among the rank-and-file party establishment. Santorum doesn't have much of a campaign. He's not well-known. Paul's people, of course, are connected with the universities, but they're all perceived as rabble-rousers. So they're a real strong candidate out here is Mitt Romney, and I expect him to do very, very well tonight. I'm looking forward to it and looking forward to meeting Matt Romney and sort of getting his perspective on how he thinks things are going on the ground.
Well, that's great insight, Ralph. I appreciate that. And let's talk a little bit about the real battleground, which is going to be Mississippi and Alabama. What looked like, or what should have been, an inherent win for the Santorum camp now looks like it's a head-to-head battle between Santorum and Romney, Romney gaining strength down there. We talked a little bit about it before, but, Bob, I want to ask you, where do you see, or why do you see Romney all of a sudden surging in the polls down in places like Alabama and Mississippi, where Mormon Northeast liberal governors like Mitt Romney don't usually fare well?
Well, I don't know so much that he's surging. Is that number one, the other two candidates, Mr. Gingrich and Mr. Santorum, seem to be, in effect, knocking each other back a little bit. But I also think that we tend to get ideas in our heads that stick longer and harder than they might. There are substantial populations in both Alabama and Mississippi that are pretty sophisticated about the economy and about the way the world works, and they're not just a bunch of good old boys. And I'm nothing wrong with a good old boy, but the fact of the matter is a lot of them have had good educations and moved around and done some things. And I think, quite frankly, approximately 30% of the voters, something like that, is not an unreasonable hope for Mr. Romney's data. The interesting thing is that the way things are going, my guess is I would be surprised if Mr. Gingrich comes in second. I think that Santorum's got a better chance than he does, and that may knock Gingrich out. His money may dry up.
Al, I want to go to you from a Democratic perspective. Does it surprise you that he's starting to see that kind of momentum down south?
That Romney's seeing that momentum. No, I think the longer this goes, the more it looks like he is inevitable, and I think that is going to play with undecideds.
Really? What about somebody like Gingrich? Is it surprising to you that in his neighborhood, in his home area, that he's not doing a lot better than he should be?
I think Gingrich has been irrelevant in this race for months. He doesn't know enough to close the door and go home.
Alan, let me ask you on the Gingrich question. Is Newt Gingrich just staying in the race right now just to make a point? Is he trying to prove something, like he may be the smartest guy in the room, or he's still relevant?
Well, you can see sitting around this table, he's not going to get a lot of votes about being the smartest guy in the room, because most of us think we were being kind to the voters. Most of us think what he's been up to lately is stupid. But what he has done, I don't agree with Al that he hasn't been relevant. I think he's been highly relevant because he, as we were talking about before, he and Santorum have divided up, if you will, the more conservative evangelical folks, and in an odd way, under the rules that the Republicans have chosen to use and will never use again, I dare say, in an odd way, Gingrich's presence has probably not had that much of an impact on the delegates, but he's probably almost certainly had an impact on who won a few states. And that's hardly the role that he sees himself playing, because he thinks he really is the big idea guy who's so brilliant. And yet Mr. Big Ideas for the last several weeks has focused maybe 80%. On gasoline prices and his plan that no one, I shouldn't say no one, that almost no one thinks could work, of setting a target price, $2.50 a gallon, and say, here's my plan to get there. Republicans and Democrats alike say, huh?
Yeah. Well, here's the other question, though, and I want to pose this to Carl Turin. Carl, when you look at the state perspective, the state parties, the Republican Party in this case, you would think that a lot of that base in the party leadership itself tends to be a super, almost a hyper element of that base electorate in a primary. Those normally would be going for Santorum or even on the fringe going for a Gingrich. They seem to be a little bit more tolerant of Romney and looking at Romney as a front runner. Are we looking at a situation where more and more or closer and closer we get to Tampa, everybody's starting to look at saying, well, yeah, maybe he's not so bad?
I think so. You know, we right after the Super Tuesday, I thought, well, Romney is going to lose in the South, and he's going to lose some other places, but he's going to get the nomination. Last week, he was 47% away in delegate count from getting the nomination. Santorum was 67%. I'm amazed, well, nothing really amazes me anymore, but I'm surprised that all of a sudden, they're neck and neck. Part of that is, especially in Mississippi, that most of the high public officials, Republican public officials in Mississippi, have endorsed Romney. I don't know what the situation is in Alabama, but I would say it would be possibly Romney number one, Gingrich possibly number two, and Santorum number three. And I think part of that is, the fact that he's Catholic, and the Southerners might not take to that as well as other people, other places have.
Well, Gingrich's Catholic too, and more people know that than seem to know it about Santorum.
Well, you're right, absolutely right. But I think what's happened with Gingrich is a lot of people possibly feel he should have gotten out of the race weeks ago, and he hasn't. And he, even though he said a few days ago, I'm out of the race, I heard that he said yesterday, I'm taking it all the way to Tampa. So we won't know until he actually says I'm out and walks away and closes it down that he's out.
Yeah, what Gingrich's supporters have been telling people is that he's going to surge in the South. He's going to win Mississippi, Alabama. That's going to take him into Texas where he wins. It's a winner-take-all state. And then he plays very competitively in California.
They can dream. And who among us knows? But the odds for that scenario just seem to be declining by the day.
Well,
we'll see what happens.
I want to go to Bob for a second on this one, though, because, Carl, you brought up a good point. He's saying he could take this all the way to Tampa. He's talking about the concept of surging in the South that Ralph brought up. How much damage to the Republican ticket is Newt doing by staying in, or is he, in fact, doing damage?
Well, I don't think he's necessarily doing damage. He's certainly slowing to the extent that he's getting delegates and he's in the race. He is making it more difficult for Romney to win. And I would think that is where he is right now. And I think he is pretty much out of it as far as I don't expect him to do very particularly well today. And that being the case, where else is he likely to win? He doesn't sound to me like, I don't care what he might think. I don't see him winning Texas. And my guess is that he is just, his ego is probably affecting his judgment. Maybe after tonight he'll see that it doesn't make any sense. If that's the case, it's going to come down to Romney and Santorum.
Well, let me go to Congressman Al. Congressman Al, let me go to you on this. Is looking at the races where we have seen in these primaries 30%, 28%, 15%, 18% between the four. Are we, in fact, we being the Republicans or the opposition, is the Republican Party giving the Obama campaign a roadmap to take down any Republican that comes up?
I think that may be. I earlier said he was irrelevant, and Alan, who is always a much more analytical person than I am, it was correct that he had been relevant in a number of ways. What I meant was he ain't going to win the nomination, and in that sense, he's irrelevant. But I think he's doing damage to the Republican Party more so than any of the other candidates.
And Bob, I want to go to you on this. You know, when we look at, you know, gas prices are rising. We just saw numbers today coming out in particularly Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, where the corrected unemployment numbers, they didn't actually stay steady or drop. They actually went up again. There's all kinds of formulas that said that Obama should be a one-term president, but we can't seem to see the Republicans getting out of their own way to make it happen. What's the linchpin in all this?
I disagree. I mean, we can get out of our own way. Whether we will or not is another question. But remind yourself, when you see numbers about the fact that the president is not doing so well, it's usually based on something that has nothing to do with the Republicans doing anything very smart. It has to do with the gas prices or the problems in Afghanistan our people getting killed, their people getting killed by some of our people by mistake. You know, all these kind of problems are damaging to the president, and it's strictly a matter of the problems that he's facing and reality, some of them, some much beyond his control. But the president is getting blamed for things that are happening when he's president.
Alan?
And the Republicans are not doing anything particularly to tell the public that they are a marvelous bunch of fellas and gals who know how to run the country. Right now, they're not looking that good. On the other hand, they're not the president, and they're not the guy who's got to sit in the Oval Office where all the problems come.
Alan, you had a comment earlier?
Oh, I was just going to say about Gingrich. He did his biggest damage in terms of going very, very negative a while back. I mean, he goes up and down and up and down, he has not been so negative towards his colleagues lately. Santorum has been the negative one lately, in effect, going on the attack very heavily against Romney and accusing him of being untruthful. I mean, people always dance around whether you can flat out call somebody a liar or not, but you can come very close. And that's been Santorum's line more lately. Gingrich has backed off of that, which makes me think that, and I also sense a lack of energy on the part of Gingrich, and I've also noticed some of the comments of the senior people around Gingrich, who in effect, one of whom said recently if Gingrich doesn't win Mississippi and Alabama, they're really going to have to reassess, and that's what prompted Gingrich to say, no, we're in it to win it all the way to Tampa. But my hunch is that if he doesn't win one of the two races today, that he will realize that he's not only hurting Republicans' chances in November, but that he's hurting his own brand. And what he does need to do is make sure that he can make a living after this is all over, if for no other reason than to pay the bills at Tiffany's. So I wouldn't be surprised if
the other Alan said
he loses, that, you know. if he loses both of these today, I think it's the beginning of the end again.
Wow, and I mean, it just seems that Newt Gingrich has 8 political lives that he's gone through, and he seems to be keeping 9 under life support. But let's look at the other side of this. How big a win does Romney have in order for him to take all the naysayers out saying, look, enough's enough. I'm going to get the nomination. Get on board or go home. Bob, what is it going to take for Mitt Romney to get that status?
You mean in today's voting?
Yes.
Well, you know, from the standpoint of let's say, common wisdom, I would think that if he runs basically as well as anybody else, you've got three candidates, and some polls put different people in different order, 1, 2, 3, in those two states. My guess is if he does as well as anybody else, he sends off any problem that he can't win. He's doing, he's done well in a place where common knowledge says he's not going to be as well received as someone else in the party. He's not conceived as conservative enough, and maybe his Mormon religion will hurt him a little bit with some evangelicals. But if he's running as well as anybody else, I think he's met his task for this day.
But, I mean, Alan, is it a simple factor of Mitt Romney, even in a slight win, 2, 3, 4 points, is that a shallow victory, or does that actually put the nail in the coffin for Tampa?
Well, I think it's closer to the latter than the former. He summed it up beautifully in Michigan when he said, "I didn't win by a lot, but I won by enough." And if he were to win today in both Mississippi and Alabama, I think that would, we don't want to talk about nails in coffins because we seem to always be wrong when we speak with such certainty. But yeah, as I said before, if Gingrich doesn't win at least one today, I think that it's still again the beginning of the end for him. If Santorum doesn't win, not so much if Santorum doesn't win, but if Romney should pull off both, that would be a huge upset. That would be big news. And even though these other guys would say, "Well, gee, almost 2/3 of the voters voted against Mitt." That line of argument has less and less credibility over time as he keeps accumulating this big lead in the delegate count. So my view is, if he wins them both today, that's the beginning of the end for these other guys.
Let me go to Congressman Al on this one. Al, when we look at Ron Paul, who we haven't talked a lot about, he's been pretty much the momentum's pretty much been going down. At some points, he had double-digit turnout for him in the primaries. Now it looks like he's hovering around either high or middle single digits. Does Ron Paul have enough infrastructure, enough cash, and enough momentum to just stay until Tampa, just to be the crazy old uncle sitting in the corner at Thanksgiving?
Well, you're stealing my my tell me a story. Which was to be that
wait a minute, I want to jump in on this. Congressman Al, you have been floating back and forth when I've been there live on Tell Me a Story. I go away for one time to Oklahoma, and all of a sudden now you have a great Tell Me a Story?
Well, I had 5 weeks to think about it.
What was your comment, Congressman Al?
Well, I'll probably say it in Spanish, having been so long in Mexico. What it was is simply this: is Ron Paul is going to be a bigger problem for the Republicans at the convention than Newt Gingrich ever will be, I believe.
Why do you say that?
Because I think his purpose is not to win. His purpose is to get his message out. And I think he is going to be able to negotiate certain things which will give him a high profile in which to make his point. And he's going to be making points that the rest of the Republican establishment would just as soon not have made.
When we look at everything coming together today, does Mitt Romney, and I'm going to go around the horn on this, does Romney come out of today in the Super Southern Tuesday the presumptive or the definitive front runner for the GOP nomination come Tampa? Bob?
Bob just lost
connectivity. I'll go to you, Congressman Al.
Bob, what were you going to say? I'll say it for you. Apparently they can hear you. I can't hear you, and I'm sitting 3 feet away.
Congressman Al.
Let's move on.
Let's move on. Carlos Sanal, what is your thought?
What was the question?
Would you like me to answer it?
Please, Alan, please.
All right. So your question was, after today, is Romney the presumptive or definitive nominee?
I
say
said it better myself.
Going into today, he was the presumptive. Coming out of today, he will be the presumptive no matter what happens. He will do better than people thought he was going to do as little as a week or so ago. The only way he becomes the definitive candidate, though, is if he wins both states.
Ralph?
I think if Romney finishes at least second in Mississippi and Alabama and wins Hawaii, it's going to look very good for him. It's going to be hard for Gingrich and Santorum to make the case to their donors to continue.
Carl?
I agree with Alan. I think he's presumptive now. He's come a long way in the interim week. If he wins both primaries, the others are going to have to really take a hard look and say, what am I going to do if I stay in this race? Am I going to hurt the party more, or shall I get out and leave it to one person?
Let's go to the Wonder Twins again there at Shelley's. Bob, you want to try this one?
Yeah. I was cut off. I think I cut myself off there for a minute. So what is the question?
Bob experienced the circumcision there at Shelley's. Go ahead.
Bob,
I think the
question is,
you should see the blood.
Easy. We're on the air live, guys. This is a family show. I'm going to get run out of Oklahoma on a rail.
Well, I think Bob may be through making families, after that.
All right. Well, here's the question, Bob, Al.
It's only 19.
Closely. Listen closely. Bob and Congressman Al. Bob first. Today, does Mitt Romney leave the South as the definitive front runner, or does he still have a fight as a presumptive front runner?
I think he still has a fight, but I also think he's closer to being the definitive guy. But I think he still has a fight.
Al, Congressman Al.
And that is the definitive answer.
You guys are killing me.
Presumably.
Look, Romney has a record of not being able to shut this thing down, and I think that that is probably going to be what happens today. He will not quite shut it down.
Well, that's going to be the last word for this segment. Well, you can tell it's happy hour. Al and Bob have had a martini and a wine. It's going to get interesting. When we do come back, though, we are going to talk about a serious subject. We are going to talk about the situation in Afghanistan. It seems to be getting worse rather than getting better, and it seems to be clouding an exit strategy for the administration. This is Backroom Politics, live from, wherever we are right now, on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Stay with us.
Seems to work out of...
Thank you.
Law Talk Radio here. This is Backroom Politics, as we do every Tuesday, talking about current events, everything political, and sometimes even non-political. We are going to take a serious turn right now and talk about the situation in Afghanistan. It is continuing to downgrade there. The latest news, which is just absolutely tragic, is a soldier based out in Washington State who apparently now, according to DOD sources, is saying he had suffered some sort of head injury while in country recently, went on a shooting, for lack of a better term, rampage, killing over a dozen Afghani locals, including numerous children. It is now called into question our endgame in Afghanistan. It is also called into question how long we're keeping our troops there, how stretched to the brink are they, and it also calls into question the issue of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, on our soldiers in country. But let's first talk about the serious issue of, you know, basically, and I'm going to start with you, Congressman Al. When you hear the news of one of our soldiers actually doing a nothing less than horrific act like this, is this a sign that we're starting to see our national service members in uniform hitting basically point blank?
I think that's a big leap. You got to keep in mind that we have had equally horrific things occurred here in the United States by Americans on Americans, and so this manifestation. You ask a very good question, but it's more than just on our troops in Afghanistan. The whole climate of the country at the present time seems to be something that triggers people who've got mental problems. And we can't expect the Afghanistans to buy that, so I'm not sending that out as a suggested excuse. But the fact is that could have happened just as easily at Fort Lewis as it did in Afghanistan. In fact, it has happened at Fort Lewis. So,
Alan, thank
you. Sorry?
Alan Moore.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Oh, you want me to comment? I agree. I agree with Al. I don't think it tells us anything about whether our overall capabilities have somehow hit the wall. Remember, we've just yanked everybody out of Iraq in a not unanimously acclaimed plan. There's more trained people available now. The military guys. What's always interesting to me. You'll hear about guys in their second deployment, their third deployment, their fourth deployment. If you're in the military, a very large number of people in the military want these overseas deployments. It's where the adrenaline is, where the excitement is, where the camaraderie is. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't plenty of guys who say, let me out of here, let me go. So and that's always been the case, but this particular incident, because it did happen over there and it came on the heels of the Quran burning, oh my gosh, it's hard to imagine a worse scenario for the U.S. Afghani relationship at this time. It's handing the Taliban this just unbelievable opportunity to trash us, to threaten us, to talk about recriminations and horrors and so on. It's a reminder of how fragile things are and how vulnerable the process is of war and peace to the stray event, the unpredictable thing that might happen. I'm not predicting an outcome here, but it sure generates greater risk. There will be people who die, just as there was after the accidental burning of the Korans, Afghanis as well as Americans who will die. There will be people who die on both sides as a result of this, and it could affect the prosecution of the war. It's tragic. It happens, as Al says. here and there.
Bob, let me go to you. You were around with President Ford, and even then Vice President Ford at the drawdown of Vietnam. When you look at what's happening now in Afghanistan, knowing and being around Washington as much as you have, is this now a sign that we just say, you know what, we've done all we can do, time to pull out, or are we going to risk going into another Charlie Wilson's war scenario?
Well, number one, first of all, I want to agree with what both Al and Alan said. I think they're right on. Remind yourself, we haven't had a situation where the last American troops are getting helicoptered out off the roof of an embassy, and that's where we were in the Vietnamese situation. And we had to get them out. We're not quite there in Afghanistan, but it certainly is a mess, and it's the kind of a mess that our opponents, just have a marvelous opportunity as far as recruiting, as far as encouraging, as far as getting people willing to go and cause us trouble, and it's not going to be easy. I don't know what the president's going to do about if he's going to speed up the pulling out of the troops or what. I don't know, and I'm not smart enough to know what the right thing to do is, but I know one thing. The American soldiers are much more likely to be targets in the foreseeable future from terrorist attacks than they would have been if these several events had not occurred.
Well, Ralph, let me go to you. From an international standpoint, does the situation in Afghanistan – basically, with the shooting of the NATO officers by an Afghani military personnel, or what happened here with the American service member shooting the civilians on a rampage, are we going to see a lot more international pressure for us to pull the plug on Afghanistan and do it quicker rather than later?
I think there's strong international pressure to get out of Afghanistan. The problem is if we get out, the situation there is much weakened, and it gives the Iranians an opportunity to come in and fill the void and make Afghanistan a client state. Certainly, these incidents have really highlighted the disconnect that the American troops have had with the Afghan civilians. And it starts to turn the people against the United States, and that is a grave concern. I think even if we do pull out the troops, we're going to need to have some sort of presence there to maintain credibility and respect and trust among the people towards the West. How you do that, I'm not sure, but there has to be some sort of presence in Afghanistan so we just don't totally pull out and create a void that the Iranians can fill.
Congressman Al, one of the issues that has been brought up, particularly after the Koran burning, is the situation where the president was seen to be apologetic or an apologist to Hamid Karzai, the president of Afghanistan. When a situation like the Koran burning, where it did not necessarily involve the death of civilians in country, in theater, now we're seeing President Obama again apologizing, but Republicans are saying, why is he apologizing? This is just collateral damage in war. What is the balance here? Where do we actually make that balance work?
Well, in this instance, it's a diplomatic question, and I think without some sort of an acknowledgement, apology, whatever you want to call it on our part, that this was a tragic thing that shouldn't have happened, I don't see where we have any place to stand for a future relationship with Afghanistan. So I'm not going to be critical of him for doing that. I think it has to be done. Whether or not this is a cause to get out, I simply don't know enough about the military and the diplomatic situation in Afghanistan right now vis-a-vis Iran and other things to know what the right thing to do is. I'm hoping the president has a hell of a lot more information than I have.
Well, we have to hope that the Situation Room at 1600 Pennsylvania is probably on full force. But Alan Moore, I want to go to you. You've dealt with the international front quite a bit. Is this now the time to in fact pull out? And is President Obama's apology being looked at as being somewhat weak by some of our allies, or is he taking the right approach on this diplomatically?
Well, first of all, on the apology question, for a couple of weeks in a row, you've heard me bash the hell out of Gingrich for his criticism of the apology over the Koran burnings. When something horrible happens and our people do it, you apologize. It's not a show of weakness. It's a show of respect. This is the same situation. And not only is it a show of respect, it's a show of intelligence that, gee, if we can calm things down by expressing regret, apologies, condolences, et cetera, and make our people safer, fabulous. I don't think it's a sign of weakness at all. That's been the Gingrich argument. I've not heard people criticizing the president in his response to this latest incident, because it is so horrific that no one knows quite what to do. Now, in terms of the pullout question, remember, and here is where politics is also a factor, like it or not. This is the war that President Obama called the just war, the correct war. He was very critical of Iraq, as many people were, but very few people had the same kind of criticism about Afghanistan, because that's where Osama and others had their camps, did their training, and where the Taliban treated women like slaves. Not that that was in and of itself enough to send us in there. This was really about terrorism and harboring them. We've not cleaned things up there. We may never. We may walk out of there saying, we bought ourselves some time, we did ourselves some temporary good, and then with our tail between our legs, like the Russians how many years ago, or the Soviets how many years ago, said, this is intractable, this is beyond our ability or beyond our willingness to sacrifice. But he is in a tough political situation, having made this in so many ways his war. If he were to simply say, okay, they don't want us here, we're leaving. We're not there because they want us there. We're there because we need to be there to protect our interests.
But let me go to Carl on this, though. Carl, from a Democratic standpoint, you know, like Alan has pointed out, the president's in a rock and a hard spot right now, whereas this is, in his eyes, his war, the just war, and has stood behind it. However, there's a lot of Democratic pressure to maybe start the drawdown immediately. And even public opinion is starting to wane on this, whereas about 4 months ago, public opinion had it at about 72%, where people were saying they were in favor, or they were judging the Afghani front war as being successful. Numbers out as late as yesterday have it down to 52%. That's a 20-point dip. Is the president able to make this judgment call and balance the two of traditionally hawkish versus having to deal with the public opinion of pulling out?
I think so. You know, this is a horrible situation. There's been a lot of bloodshed against Americans by Afghanis. There's been shootings of Afghanis with other Afghanistan people over the last 6 months. This was particularly bad because it's a U.S. soldier. And, you know, whether he has some PTSD or not, it's a horrible situation. I think, you know, again, the president has to sit down with Secretary of State and the diplomats and try to see where we can go to save the situation. We're in Afghanistan because we needed to be there to protect our interest, to defeat the Taliban. A lot of that has been done. We've We've done away with Osama bin Laden, and we've done away with a lot of the leadership of the Taliban. Now, does that say, okay, job is done? We've had victory. We leave. In my own mind, I don't think so. Not yet. I think there's more to do, and we just have to see how this plays out. And also, I don't think there's been any, at this point in time, I don't think there's been any recriminations about against our soldiers and our people there.
Well, I'll tell you something. It's something that we're going to be obviously taking an eye on, and it's obviously something that we want to make sure that we keep in our thoughts as we move down this road. I think it's going to be a situation that's not necessarily going to be an easy one, but it's definitely something that's got internationally captivated.
And it's important for us to have a presence in Afghanistan to protect our interests.
Right. Well, when we come back, we're going to take a break real quick. When we come back, we're going to do Tell Me a Story, and we're going to let Al liven it up because I'm sure he's got a good Tell Me a Story this week, and catch up with each other on some stuff happening around the Beltway. This is Backroom Politics, live from normally Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital, by way of Claremore, Oklahoma, Virginia, and Hawaiian Islands. Oh, and Maryland, too. Stay with us. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Oh, we're back together here.
Stretch of a very diversely located Backroom Politics live on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Justin Russell, and with me, as always, Congressman Al, Bob Hines, Alan Moore, Dr. Ralph Winnie, Carl Tuven, and this is my favorite part of the show. I want to talk about Tell Me a Story, where we go around the table and talk about any rumors, innuendos, buzz, or intelligence that we've gathered over the past week and bring it to the forefront of the mainstream, or in our case, not so mainstream media. I'm going to start today. Al, you've been dying to get one in. Go ahead, Congressman Al.
Well, I already got it in. That was my one about the gentleman from Texas who I think is going to cause the Republicans problems in their convention. But I have another question here. I come back and I find Carl Tuven. Now, Carl Tuven and I have known each other for years, and Carl, you are a very, very nice man. How in the world did you ever get tied up with this gang?
Hey, I recommended Carl.
Okay, as the moderator of Backroom Politics, let me clarify one thing. While you are gallivanting around like Pancho Villa down in Mexico, you don't check in, you don't write. We figured, well, we better have a Democrat in reserve in case you decide to emigrate down to Puerto Vallarta. So he was a surrogate, but we like him so much, we thought, you could probably use some Democratic help. We'll keep him.
Well, I think he's brought some dignity and intelligence to the overall situation. Although your complaint about this sounds like a Jewish mother. I've got eight children, and not one of them writes.
You know what, Congressman Al? I've got to tell you, I think you've insulted just about every demographic we could possibly want on this show today. Welcome home, sir.
Well, I've got this checklist here, and I got a couple of more that I haven't got to yet.
Well, save it. You got weeks to do it. Let's try and get this thing back on track. Bob Hines, tell me a story.
The day's elections in three states. I think that Mr. Romney will win in Hawaii. I think in the other two states, I'm not sure, but I'm willing to get out on a limb and say Romney will win at least one of the two, which will probably be the most important event of the evening because he's proving he can win in the South.
Wow, good call. Interesting call. Going around to Alan Moore. Alan, tell me a story.
Yeah, well, the president has had just the most incredible run of good luck. We've got a slowly, though limping, improving economy. It's a little bit, in my mind, like having a fever of 105 and having it go to 104 and saying, oh, we're getting better. But nonetheless, it's at least movement in the right direction. And then he's had this extraordinary Republican primary where the Republicans are just kicking the crap out of each other day after day, week after week, driving up their negatives, giving storylines and quotes for the Democrats to use later. The president, in my mind, fumbled on that whole religious institution, contraception, insurance issue, and then the Republicans snatched it from the jaws of victory and completely mushed it up and muddled it up and created this whole crazy sideshow, bringing Rush Limbaugh into it with his idiotic comments. You watch and you say, when does this string of luck run out? The president issues a statement, or the attorney general does, about how it's legal for us to kill Americans overseas using drones. There's a big crackdown on leakers that is underway. The press is strangely quiet about all of this stuff. I have no idea what all this good luck is all about, but gasoline is at $4 a share, $4 a gallon.
You were talking about gasoline. You weren't talking about
gasoline. The situation in Afghanistan, as we discussed, is just absolutely horrendous. We never got around to Syria or to Iran and Israel. There's a lot of bad stuff out there too, and some of it was bad luck, particularly the gas prices and the Afghanistan stuff. So I think that all of those who think, oh, the Republicans have thrown it away, they've handed it to the president, not so fast. There were polls this week that showed Romney beating Obama nationwide. We all know these races are handled state by state, and that's where you have to focus it. But the what goes around comes around, and strings of good luck, as we all know, often then get messed up with some bad stuff. Sometimes it's just luck and fate, but it's a long way to November, and I think that Romney's going to help himself today, and we'll be looking at a close race later this year.
Wow, good call. Ralph Winnie, tell me a story.
I'm going to go out on a limb in the presidential election. Obama is not going to win the state of Florida. He didn't win it by much last time, and he's not as popular in this election cycle.
Okay, good call. Carl Tuvin, tell me a story.
I had the pleasure of being with an old friend of mine, Max Cleveland, yesterday for lunch. And he went over a lot of different things that we've been talking about. And he looked at me and he said, "What do you think?" And I said, "Max, I think it's going to be close, but I think we're going to eke it out. But it'll be a very, very close election." One of my friends was with me, and he complimented Max, on his robustness and, you know, general demeanor. He's turning 70 very soon. And Max looked at us and said, "You know, fellas, there's three ages in life: youth, middle age, and you're sure looking good."
Okay, Max Fino with a zinger. Like it. Anyway, well, I'll tell you what, it's been a good show, folks. I appreciate everybody's patience as we deal with the technical issues of doing this remotely. We're going to be remote for the next couple of shows, so, but the content's still the same. Congressman Al is back. Congressman Al, how was the trip, by the way, just out of curiosity?
The trip was very relaxing. We went down with grandchild and a daughter, as well as my wife, for a couple of weeks, and then we stayed there for a couple of weeks and had some remarkable food. And the Mexicans, we hear so many bad things about them. Puerto Vallarta happens to be a very peaceful area with very nice people and very nice restaurants, as a matter of fact. And so we had a very good time.
Very good.
Hey, Al, did you hear what happened to me on my trip to Mexico?
No.
I came back engaged.
Nope. Really?
Wow. Okay, well, wait a minute. We got breaking news here. Well, it's not breaking to us, but we weren't going to say it on the air. Alan Moore is engaged. Congratulations, Alan. Can you tell us about you and your betrothed?
I can. Kathleen is her name, and we're going to get married over Memorial Day weekend in Evanston, Illinois, where she grew up and where her parents are. They can't travel anymore, so we decided we would take family and go there, and so her parents could be part of it.
Hey, Al, aren't you glad you went to Mexico and didn't come back married again?
I was thinking that if I had tried to get engaged in Mexico, I would never have gotten home.
Well, that's why we got Carl Tuvin on the air, because we figured we didn't think you were going to come back in one piece. Anyway, listen, on behalf of Congressman Al Swift, who we really did miss you, Al, don't go that far again. Congressman Al Swift, Bob Hines, Alan Moore, Dr. Ralph Winnie, Carl Tuven. I'm Radio's JT. Well, you know what? I'm just here in Oklahoma, and I'm loving it. We will see you next week. Same time, same channel. Live, kind of, from Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Bob, I'm pointing at you.
Always the place to be.
Exactly, exactly. Join us on Blog Talk Radio next week, folks. Have a great week, and we'll see you then. Take care.
So long, guys.
Bye-bye. So long, guys.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.